Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey friends, welcome to the Tenis and Bagels podcast. And this is an episode that we've been sort of, well, I guess pretty much everyone in the tennis community has been dreading about like for the past couple of years. And needless to say, everything in this episode is about Serena Williams, one of the best tennis players ever to have graced the courts, who a lot of us were actually sort of expecting that could be making a deep run in the US Open, and she basically almost did. But yeah, unfortunately, yesterday, she played what should be her last ever professional match. That's why Serena Williams might be just retired from tennis as we speak. 23 Grand Slams, all of that, we all know that this. But today, we're going to try to focus a bit more on just this US Open that she just played, which was funny because even the US Open was probably expecting her to lose in the first round because they had this whole ceremony for her, and Billie Jean King came. Some people had like very nice speeches for her, and she ended up playing another two matches after. All of them very epic, very awesome, with a lot of classic vintage Serena Williams in it. And to be honest, I don't even know how she does it because she's 41 years of age and I am 30. And if I had to play a half, not even half, like a 10% intensity that she plays, I probably wouldn't be able to walk for a month. So incredible stuff from Serena Williams. Very gutted that she lost. And yeah, I'm here with Owen and Vansh, and we're going to be trying to talk about the awesome matches that she played in this week. And yeah, how are you guys doing, guys? You doing good, Owen?
Gesturing at Vance to go first. Sorry. I'm doing well. Excited to talk about Serena, but a bit sad, as I'm sure everyone else is.
Yeah,
I'm pretty excited for this episode because obviously when you have someone as big as Serena Williams, it's kind of extremely difficult to find the words and context to put her legacy in perspective because she's one of the most iconic sports figures and just transcends tennis in a way we haven't seen before. So this is going to be special, and we're going to try to do this justice as best as we can.
Yeah, and I guess we can just start from the beginning. Like her first match she played, I think she won 6-3, 6-3, a phenomenal performance. And Astra Ash was full. She gave a good serving performance. What do you guys think of that match? You can start, Vansh.
You can get better at this. I'll let you go first.
We are sorry. We are very.
I'll let you go first for everything.
Okay, sure. I think what's impressed me the most about her run is that she kind of played herself into form. I actually wasn't that impressed with how she played in her first match. I think she had maybe five double faults in that first set, and I felt like it wasn't that she squeaked through that match really, because the scoreline was pretty comfortable, but I didn't think she was anywhere near her best. But then against Kontaveit in the second round, I thought she really played herself into form, and she was hitting, she was moving better. I thought she was striking the ball better from the baseline. I thought she served better. And then I thought a lot of that form carried into the match she lost against Chomljanovic. But yeah, in that first round, I felt like there was definitely some rustiness there. I think it's easy to forget just because of the presence she has on court. She really hasn't played much tennis in the last year, 2 years. And unfortunately, like, rustiness affects everyone. Even when the greats come back, it takes them time to find their game again. But I was just impressed at how quickly she did that. It was like it took her one match.
Yeah, for me, it was just really cool and exciting to see the ovation that she got when she entered the court for the first time against Kovinic, because you know, I had kind of imagined what it would be like in a situation like this, but it even exceeded that. To see the crowd go absolutely wild, and to see all the you could tell that a big celebration was sort of coming, regardless of she had won or lost. And there was also a lot of ambiguity there as to what do we sort of expect from Serena in this? Because obviously the only information we really have is the match that she played at Wimbledon. As Owen had mentioned, she played very few matches in the last 1 year. The match against Tan at Wimbledon, which was a really exciting match, you know, three setters, and it went all the way to the super tie break. And then of course you have the Toronto matches that she played, and then where she lost to Bencic, but won a match before that, and then the Raducanu match. So from this standpoint, I felt like there was a release of pressure on Serena's end, because it felt like at least no matter what happens, her career and legacy has been spectacular so far. And so however it plays out, at least the pressure is sort of off her shoulders. And I could see that, because in the beginning, she wasn't really playing her best tennis. As Owen mentioned, I thought she was quite rusty as well, like in the first six or seven games, even went down, I think a break was down 3-2 against Kovacic. And then you started to see a few vintage glimpses of Serena here and there, whether it be a return winner or like some spectacular serving from Serena at the end to close out the first set, or just kind of moments like that that remind you like what makes her so great, and just sort of that she was able to close that match out and just feed off of the crowd. And just it was great to see, because you could see there was a weight lifted off her shoulders and she started to actually enjoy tennis again. And she mentioned she hasn't been able to feel that way because she's had a target on her back for the last 23 years or so. So that was cool to see from the first round. And then I was just glad that she got to play again, and the journey would just continue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the serve has been, it's been kind of a two-edged, double-edged sword, in the sense that it's been there. Like when she had like a few games that she pretty much aced through, like she served a few incredible aces against both Kontaveit and Tomljanovic. But also like when he let her down, it essentially just vanished. So it was an issue for her as much as it was one of her greatest weapons. And you can be sure that if Serena had played like a more fuller like a schedule, I'm pretty sure she wouldn't have dropped those games, especially against Tomljanovic. At least one of them she wouldn't have dropped so easily, like to close out one of the sets. I think it's definitely something that impresses me so much about her, because when we saw her playing in Toronto and then in Cincinnati and even at Wimbledon, what kind of came over to me is just like, well, she's definitely playing well. You can never expect a great champion to just kind of go out without a fight. When I saw the score against Raducanu, I thought it was pretty comprehensive. Like, I mean, Raducanu is very young and she's coming of age essentially on tour. So even though she hasn't had the best results this year, she would be tough to beat if you don't have like a lot of, practice. And Serena hasn't had the best movement. So I didn't expect much from her in this US Open. I definitely thought she might lose in the first round. The way that she ended up winning her first match and a comfortable score, like in the sense that like she kind of got the job done, wasn't necessarily playing her best, but was by far not her worst performance, I would say maybe in her career. So yeah, like it's definitely like every match that she's played impressed me even more, like about how hard she's hitting the ball, how consistently good she's been playing, how well she's able to raise her level, because when you rust, it might be tough to just kind of get yourself to play better. But then Serena just kind of essentially yelled at herself to play better. And then she did, like, for the next couple points. And, yeah, I guess we can move on, like, maybe to the Kontaveit match if you guys want to move over this way. But, like, feel free to talk in different matches, different points if you want to. Like, I find there's a lot of Serena to unpack, I guess, this still this Open.
Yeah, I think the point you made about her serve kind of fluctuating is a great one, because against Kontaveit, late in that first set, 5-4 up in the tiebreak, I think she hit back-to-back aces to close it out, and that felt totally vintage, totally Serena. That serve is one of the greatest weapons in tennis history. It's fantastic, it's unreadable, it's fast. insanely difficult, borderline impossible to handle when it's firing. But then, like you said, Andre, it also did let her down in moments. And I think there's kind of a sad irony in the fact that in what's probably going to be the last set of her career, she got broken in every service game. But yeah, I was really impressed with how she was kind of able to rise to the occasion in big moments, because like those two aces in the tiebreak, and there was also a moment against Tomljanović in the second set. She'd been up 5-2, had some set points, got hauled back to 5-all, and then it went to a tiebreak. So the momentum was against her. And then she was ahead 5-4 in that tiebreak, and she won this 20-shot rally with a forehand winner down the line that was just perfectly timed, not just like in terms of striking the ball, but in terms of the rally, that was the best moment to attack. And then she had an ace on set point. And again, I was just amazed that she was able to play like that with so few matches under her belt, because I don't know, it's so intense in moments like that. And I think it's kind of impossible to handle them well, not just without experience, but without recent experience. And it seemed like she needed virtually no time at all to get back to that level. And I think the part that saddens me the most, really, and she talks about this in her on-court interview after the match, was she was talking about how she sort of played herself into form, and she said, oh, I should have started my comeback earlier this year. And it sounded like she was kind of joking, but I sensed that there was some genuine regret there, because I think she recognized how well she was playing, and that had she come back earlier, she could have played even better. And I don't know if that regret is enough to prolong her career, but I do think it was there, which makes me a bit sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Like, for her to rise to the occasion against the number two player in the world, and essentially sort of break her game down like she did, and to especially to win the third set, because obviously we, you know, she served for the first set at 5-4 against Kontaveit, got broken, and then served out the tiebreak with two aces, and then had to navigate that dip that she had in the second set, where Kontaveit also raised her level, and I thought that's some of the best tennis we've also seen Kontaveit play in, you know, a long time. So it was amazing that Serena was not only able to match that, but then find an extra gear that we've seen her do so often in her career, in the third, when everything was on the line. And it was just her sort of just reaching back to some of her best years, some insane defense. I mean, considering the circumstances, not like peak Serena by any means, but like just, you know, finding those big serves in crucial moments, digging out of tough holds, like on the stretch while like on the run, she pulled off some spectacular lobs to get herself back into the point. And it was Kontaveit who felt overwhelmed by the occasion, and who felt like she had to be the one to make this match closer and get back into it. And Serena was able to close her out. So that was very impressive to me. And then I felt like, okay, she can work her way into this tournament now. And she's got the reps that she needed. Obviously, she also played a doubles match with Venus, so that also helped in terms of, you know, getting the right matches and prep that she needed. I feel like she trained really hard in between Cincinnati and the US Open, because I did kind of see like a big improvement in terms of her fitness, and also just like her faith in her own game and backing herself in big moments. You started to see that. But then in the Tomljanović match, I think it was kind of fitting the way it ended, actually, because I feel like it was symbolic of her whole career in the sense, especially that last game against Tomljanović, where she saved like 5 match points and just kept on hitting return winner after return winner. And just, it was kind of frustrating that she wasn't able to find that on a deuce point or when she had a couple of break points. But it was crazy that that was the longest match she's ever played at the US Open in 21 years. And that's how she goes out, even though she got breadsticked in the third set.
It's so fitting that it's the longest match. It's incredible.
It's so seriously, it did not feel like a breadstick to me, because not only was she up in early, but also just the way, the manner of the set, it just felt anything but a 6-1 set. Just felt so competitive, and it just felt like that was the right way to go out, like against an opponent who's maybe not like a super, you know, well-known top player to most people, but just like you got to learn a little bit more about her and what makes her so good. And then you got to also celebrate Serena. So I feel like it was a perfect send-off in a way, like in front of the home crowd. And she did kind of hint that she could have started a little earlier. I did kind of feel that way as well, especially maybe before Wimbledon, or maybe she could have tried to play the French Open or maybe something like that. But I feel like she did absolutely the best she could given the circumstances. And that's kind of what Serena is all about. Like, just give it all that she has on that particular day. And I think that's what we got to see And I do think it's the right time for her, to be honest with you. Like, I do feel like, you know, there's, you know, as much as she was able to show her abilities, it is still going to be very difficult to keep that up for 7 matches. And I feel like she's so competitive, so intense. She wants to go all the way and she believes she can, but it's just at a certain point after you're 41 and after you've gone through as much, I also think like she's got a lot of other things going on off the court. Just not only in terms of growing her family, but just like her business venture. And just, I just feel like it's a really good time. And I think she got a really great send off, like playing 4 out of 5 matches on Arthur Ashe in the night slot. I just think it couldn't have been any better. The electricity on the ground was just unlike anything I've ever seen before.
Yeah. I think in terms of, I think you pointed out something that was really interesting, how like Kontaveit played some of her best matches that she's played. In a long time, and it's crazy that like we got to see Serena having played like 4 or 5 matches this whole year, and then players starting like essentially to peak against her. Like in a sense, like they all played such good matches. Like we didn't get like matches where both players are sort of struggling. They were actually hitting winners and playing phenomenal rallies all the time, and Serena was into those. She obviously was picking her moments to run and those to like just let it go, because obviously I guess with her age she's not as mobile as she used to be, but gosh, how well she moves for a 41-year-old, like come on. It's beyond it's beyond expectations, really, like what you say, like for how she's playing and how she had to deal with players playing so well and making it close, making it like She had every chance to win that match against Tomljanovic. Unfortunately let it go, but she could have had the first set in the bag. It could have been like straight up another 6-3, 6-3 win for her. Been in the round 4 and that's it. Like second week of a Grand Slam, like no big deal. But obviously Tomljanovic played a phenomenal match as well. She essentially was ice cold on pressure points, on putting pressure all back on Serena. And I think when I think of Serena, the whole time that I was watching those matches is that like, it's no wonder that 25 to 30 year old Serena, even younger than that, like dominated the tour for so long. Like if her at 41 years old, like with 5 matches under her belt, was playing this well and was so hard to beat, it's obvious that as Serena Williams that is like fresh, physically fit and match fit and with a lot of like youthful energy going on in her. Like she would obviously play incredibly well. If she peaks, I don't think that many people can do much about her. If she was peaking on serve yesterday, it would have been phenomenally hard, even for Tomljanovic playing as well as she was to close her out. I don't think it would have been a breadstick. Even at like 5-1, Serena had like I think 40-love or 40-15 up 1-0 in the third set. Yeah, and that was like the second or third time in that match that happened, that she lost her serve up 40-15. And it's just thinking, if Serena had gotten one of those breaks back, even that one at 5-1, it would have seemed that Tomljanovic could have maybe, you know, dropped her level a bit. Maybe it would have bought enough time for Serena to come back into this match. Maybe it was already over. We don't know. It was over as it was over. But if Serena had gotten one of those breaks back, maybe she could have played herself a bit more into form. And another thing that I thought about, like in terms of how well she played with just as little games under her belt, and the difference that would make in Australia would, I think, be the fact that I guess you play just with a bit more abandon when it's like your last tournament and it's your home tournament, and you know that like you're not going to come back, so kind of you're essentially fighting for your life. And I think that if Serena comes back to Australia, it's just not going to be the same thing. I think she, and it's my own opinion, that I think she would be setting herself up for disappointment if she goes to Australia. I think it was just not going to be the same vibe if she announced that she's going to play in Australia. It's just going to feel different. So I think that part of the reason why she played so well was because she said to herself, this is my last tournament and this is the US Open. So I think this could have partially been what it is. Of course, it's Serena Williams. If she manages to conjure up the same level, yes, of course, like she there's no reason why she wouldn't be playing the Australian Open unless she says I don't want to play it. But yeah, that's my personal opinion about that one.
Yeah, well, like I think the question you posed, Vonser, what you said about this maybe being the right time for Serena is such an interesting question, because we're in this unprecedented era of GOATs, and that includes like how they choose to end their careers, right? Like in terms of 20 yeah. plus time major champions, the only one we really have to go off of is Steffi Graf, who retired at 30. And that was within a couple of months of making a Wimbledon final. Neither Serena nor the big three are doing that, right? Like they're playing well into their 30s. And it's so interesting for them, because even when they decline, they're more than capable of playing at a top 10 level. Like their decline would maybe be a typical tour player's peak. So from their perspective, like, is it enough to still be competitive at the third round? Like making third rounds, losing close matches, or is that not enough? I just think it's like kind of intriguing to contemplate, like, when is the right time? Like, would they mm-hmm. be content playing until they're not competitive at all? Or are they so competitive that not being relevant, or not being a factor, a contender to winning big titles, would be too hard to bear while playing on tour? Because I think from like simply a logical perspective, if Serena keeps playing, she can be relevant, right? Like I think if she comes back, trains hard in the off season and comes to Australia, she could be even more dangerous there than she was here. It's just a question of whether she thinks that's worth it. And I'm going to be interested to see how the big three choose to end things as well, because even Federer, who's the oldest, when he was playing last year at Wimbledon on one leg, he made the quarterfinals. Like, if you take out the context, that's a great result. And so I think it's interesting to consider, like, when is the breaking point for these players, these legends? Like, what is the eventual decisive decision-making factor for them?
Yeah, and the thing is that that's so fascinating, because there's so many different ways that they look at it, right? It's purely just, okay, the results on the court, but then contextualizing that with how many matches you've played recently, plus then factoring in your family, plus then factoring in, you know, obviously sponsors, business side of it, that's one thing. But then, you know, just how much longer do you want to keep on putting yourself under fire like that? Because the reality is expectations from Serena, it might seem amazing that she got to the third round or the fourth round in a major, but people on the outside might think, oh, if Serena's not winning, she's done, you know, or stuff like that. And so it's kind of hard to like separate those two things, because obviously the people who are not so much in tennis like we are, you know, they kind of just associate Serena with like automatic winning titles, even though, you know, it doesn't quite work like that. And I think for her opponents, it's kind of interesting to see how they react to it as well. Like, because on the one hand, like many of them look up to Serena, many of them have watched her win several titles and, you know, be the greatest and all that. And they've also, at one point, maybe they were very intimidated facing against her when she was in her prime. And, you know, maybe already they were down 3-love before they even stepped on the court. That's how big her aura was. And that's how great Serena was. But now when they play her, they look up to her, but they sort of relish that challenge, and they want to peak, and they want to make themselves extremely, you know, by beating Serena, you become extremely relevant, and you become you become known for a long time. And you also add to your legacy. You also, I feel like that, and then that sort of spreads around the rest of the tour. And then they believe that they can beat her. And it's sort of like the cycle of just like, you know, like passing the torch, but to like several different players. And it's kind of not how that's why it's sort of like, there's never a perfect ending in terms of like sending someone off, like someone's career as big as Serena would take like years and years of like sending off to like make it seem like, okay, now like it's truly sort of that air of invincibility and aura is sort of fading away. But like, it's just so hard to keep chipping at that, if that makes sense. So it's just kind of an interesting dichotomy, I feel like, for the players, because they look up to her, but they also want to really badly beat her. And it's just kind of like, is she willing to go through months and months of training, because clearly she put in a lot of work to get to this US Open third round and like wring absolutely every last ounce of her career that she had left. And I think as long as you know in your heart that you've done that, then I feel like you know that, okay, you gave it your absolute all. And I think Serena has, so she can definitely be extremely proud of that. And honestly, those four slam finals that she lost, you know, in the time it might have felt like, oof, we're not used to seeing Serena lose like this. Oh my goodness, you know, the aura is fading away. But now I look back at those four finals and I'm just amazed at how she was even able to get herself in those positions in the first place, you know, to make four major finals plus two major semis, another quarterfinal where she rolled her ankle against Pliskova. That could have been another semi. It's like all these chances. She still managed to manufacture all of those after having so many complications with giving birth to Olympia and being in her late 30s. And she still played so well to get to those finals. So it's just kind of, in a way, I feel like it added to her legacy rather than hindered her, in a way, if that makes sense. I kind of look at those differently now.
Yeah, it's interesting, like, how I think one of the questions that Owen said, like, about, like, when do players that are, like, have defined tennis, like, they're greatest of all time, like, all of them have, like, over 20 Grand Slams. Serena Williams obviously has the most Grand Slams and Grand Slam titles in the Open era, so it's no small feat. So I guess, like, for them, like, when you transcend tennis that much, like, you're either winning for the sake of winning or winning for the sake of breaking records. I think Serena at this point, like, she obviously said, like, of course I look at the 24, of course I would like to get it, but that is also the understanding that her record is different in a lot of ways, and in the Open era is pretty big as well. And
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's also the fact that tennis has changed so much since back in the 60s, 70s, and all the draws are massive. All the racket technology is so much improved. Physicality is a lot improved as well. So, of course, what Serena did is incredible. But I think a lot of the times as well, Serena is competitive, but she also just loves to play tennis. And we can almost just kind of look at sort of like a comparison market in a sense, like an Andy Murray, which is probably one of the greatest of this past decade. We can just say that Andy Murray has achieved many great things on his own right, and he's definitely had to suffer major complication in his career, and he's still playing. He's obviously not a top 10 level. He can put up a top 10 level performance maybe once or twice in the tournament, but you see his results right now. But he's still playing just because he still loves it. He just kind of like wants to compete. He still feels that he has it in him. And I think that if Serena isn't being competitive to the sense that she would have be winning Grand Slam titles, or even just titles in general, I think if she wants to play just because she wants to, I think it would be also a very gold thing to do. It's just like, you know, I don't really care. I've already achieved so much. Like, my legacy is so huge. I just kind of want to play for the fun of it, and, you know, just kind of see what happens, and just be here and just be enjoying myself. Now the target is completely off my back because I know I'm not playing all that well, but and I don't have anything left to achieve aside from breaking my own records at this point. So I think if you're Serena and she says, I know I'm just going to play another tournament just because she loves it, and eventually she ends up evolving away from tennis, as she said it, just because she says, I just feel like not necessarily that she's got bored of it, but she says, oh yeah, I don't have the same interest anymore. I will always cherish my memories, but I don't want to play professionally anymore. Like, it's become actually just a lot more work than it is fun. But I still obviously enjoy playing. And that's obviously a great way for her to go out if she so wishes to, because I think that when you get to the status of GOAT, I think the way that you decide to go out is pretty much the right way. So long as it's on her terms. And I don't think there is not a lot of ways that she can go out now that it's not on her terms. I think if she went out due to injury, if she kind of had a massive injury, like torn a ligament at the US Open, that would have been extremely sad, because that would obviously end her career right there and right now. She wouldn't even have a say in it. But now that she's just lost and she seems very fit, I think that by the time that she says, like, oh yeah, that actually was my last tournament, I think it would be extremely fitting. It would be a perfect ending, just a boss ending. It's just like, yeah, now I'm done. And that's it. You know what I mean? It's more bossy than Sampras is winning the US Open when he retired. Because technically he didn't even retire officially until like a year after. So
yeah, he practiced for a while and just couldn't get the motivation up and then called it. It was not So yeah, to kind of close this out, I wanted to ask you guys, what do you think Serena's legacy is, like both on court and off court? I know that's a huge, heavy question. But like, I think starting with on court, it's just amazing to me how she mastered every area of the game. Like, I think she is the perfect player. Like, at one point, she was the best server and the best returner in the world. Both forehand and backhand, she could hit amazing shots from anywhere on the court. There were points when her movement was completely off the charts. And I think it's just not just having that balance, but having, like, being balanced at that incredibly, incredibly high peak is amazing to me. Like, I can't imagine how difficult it would be to play someone who's not only essentially unbreakable when she's serving well, but also is going to break you if you miss first serves at all. Like, that must be completely nightmarish. And I'm not super well positioned to comment on the off-court stuff, but I think she's inspired an incredible number of people. I think her journey to the top is amazing. And we're unlikely to see a story like the one she and Venus have had ever again.
Yeah, I think it's so difficult to just sum up her entire legacy. I think just the fact that she was who she was, and she unabashedly was herself, and showed that, female athletes, she sort of broke the mold in a way in terms of the way female athletes express their emotion on the court, is that they actually can, you know, rather than, you know, keeping themselves bottled up, they can show their emotion in a way that shows, you know, she can pump her fists, she can play aggressively, she sort of became that symbol of strength that I feel like a lot of people looked up to. And they said, if someone who looks like her and who's from where she is, which is Compton, California, and went through, and used shopping carts as instead of a ball basket and stuff like that, and went through ridiculous amounts of criticism and experienced a lot of racism. I mean, there's so many other elements to it, and grew up having the lifestyle that she had, and she can make it to the top. Why can't I, you know? So I think that's the kind of inspiration that I think that's what this new generation always talks about. Your generation of Coco Gauff, Naomi Osaka, Leila Fernandez, but other girls as well who look up to her, and not just girls, but boys as well. So I think she's transcends sport in a way that's so much different than any other player that I've seen. I mean, when you have a career that's 28 years long, you also dip your toe into several other sectors outside of sport, right? Like business and fashion and even like singing and so many different things where I feel like she's just, and obviously the movie. So she was also at the Oscars. Just feel like her legacy is so much beyond tennis that I feel like a single match or something is like just such a small thing in the larger scheme of things. I just feel like it just goes so much beyond tennis. And I feel like the Vogue article that she wrote really showed me just how human she is. Cause you could see that she was really struggling with this decision. Like, she was at peace with it, but she was always really wrestling with it, that, yeah, this is really, really tough for me. And that's why you could see her sort of, you know, finding words to describe her, the retirement, but it was, or evolving, but it was just really hard for her. And I got the sense that it's not going to be easy. So it was just cool to see how she did it her own way. And I think that's what I'll always remember, that she can just be proud of it all. And yeah, it just brought so much, mm-hmm. inspired so many people.
Yeah, I guess like on court.
Oh, and of course the serve. The serve is the greatest weapon. Yeah. The serve is the greatest weapon in any player that I've ever seen, like in terms of, especially like in the women's game, like the greatest serve of all time, like hands down. I don't think any other serve comes even close.
Yeah.
I agree. Especially it's consistent, it's well-placed, it's disguised, it has everything. It's powerful. It's players have hit harder serve than she has, but at that point, what matters is like if you added like a couple of miles per hour to your serve. She was ace queen for the longest time. She, I think her serve is definitely, along with her physicality and just how she presented herself on court, I think it changed the women's game.
Yeah, I just want to say one more thing. I was thinking about, I actually tweeted about this earlier this last night, actually, because it got me thinking about the big three and how their retirement and how their legacy will sort of be talked about, right? So I started to see that Serena Williams, in a way, sort of has a lot of the traits that the big three have. And she has a lot of individual ones from each of the big three. Like, in a way, she's sort of a lot like Rafa in the sense that she has that competitive drive, that intensity, that will, like impeccable physical strength. She's extremely demonstrative, fist pumps, all the rest of it, celebrations. And she's really, really remarkable at enduring pain. That's another trait that Rafa has. And I feel like Serena has all of those traits. And then you look at someone like Djokovic, right? He has such inner self-belief. He's very open about being the best, right? He's very upfront about the reason why he wants to play. And that he doesn't mind shying away from the fact that I'm here to play for history. I'm here to play for records. I want to be the best. I feel like Serena has that as well. And then Federer, I mean, that's where you have the longevity, playing as many years as they have, like winning matches in their teens, 20s, 30s, and 40s. Obviously, you talk about the serve. That's a really big pillar of Federer's game, more than the other two, I would say. And then, of course, transcending the game, being, you know, involved in and just being a household name and just so much bigger than tennis, you know, and like transcending, you know, transcending tennis. And then obviously you have the business side of it and then the whole brand and just the number of fans and the impact. So I feel like she has all the big three sort of in one.
Mm-hmm. I think I get that for sure.
Yeah. I guess to comment a bit on that, like somebody commented on the Twitter account yesterday that not a lot of comparisons are made the other way around from like women towards men, but a lot of like from men towards women. And this is obviously a valid, like, not necessarily a complaint, but like really it's just a feeling that just, it's a very, very valid feeling towards like women's sports to men's sports. And I think that while you did compare the big three to Serena in a lot of ways, I guess you'd be even more fair to like compare just the other way around to Serena to the big three. Like the big three do have a lot of things that Serena did bring to the game. Mm-hmm. And Serena actually started earlier. Like she started winning in the 90s, yeah. Which was before Federer actually started like getting his game together, even though they're about the same age. I think in a way, if we can look at Serena's legacy and hoping that we can compare just how men's game could have changed as well. Like some men like have expressed how Serena Williams has inspired them. And I think it's more than fair. And I think it's so impressive that, and it should really just come as something that we should always look forward to, like in the future, just how both men and women can inspire each other in the game. And like female athletes can inspire like younger male athletes to become a big, like, I think Tiafoe mentioned how he was inspired by Serena Williams as well. So isn't that great? Like to see like, men's tennis also has this Serena has brought, or like other women that came before her have brought as well. So, I think that's part of her legacy as well that I think we're going to be seeing more and more in the future.
Yeah. I don't know if there's any athlete from any sport whose first name carries the same power that Serena's does. Like, I think you can tell anyone tennis fan or not just Serena and they immediately know who you're talking about, and have some sense of what she's accomplished. And yeah, I think we're unlikely to see a career like hers again. And I got into tennis late, so I missed watching her best years live. Gone back and seen a lot of highlights, but I feel so lucky to see as much as I did anyway. It's been amazing.
Yeah,
it was truly
the only thing that.
I was just going to say, it's truly been a privilege, like all the way, just to see how far she's taken it, and just the fact that she was there before my parents got married, right after they had me. So then I was a kid. So then now I finished grad school, and now here she still is, like, doing amazing things. So it's just, just like the longevity, and I think how much she's meant to people, and how much sports. We talk all the time about how sports are such a gateway for people to, like, escape from other things in their life. And I feel like Serena has done that for a lot of people, and it's just like great entertainment. Even if you just take out the rest of the inspiring people and all the impact, it's just very entertaining to always watch her play.
I think the one interesting thing about Serena's career is that back when she was winning it all and just completely dominating the tour, it was just really hard being a fan of anyone else other than Serena, because you would know that Serena was the ultimate obstacle to surpass. And I think that now that she's retiring, it's just really good to look back and realize that it was just really good to have her on tour, even if you were a fan of, like, anyone else back in the day, like if you're a fan of Dimitrieva or Dinara Safina, just to see that Serena did what she did. I think it's way better that we had Serena than if we hadn't had Serena. So yeah, we are obviously very thankful that she appeared in that sport. So yeah.
Yeah.
For any sure. Final remarks?
This US Open, actually, the send off, it kind of reminded me of Andre Agassi in 2006. Because, you know, obviously Pete Sampras is sort of the extreme where he just totally retired, like, on the high, like winning in 2002, and then tried to train, but then stopped. And then, of course, then this was so much better than, you know, had that last match been her tearing her hamstring 15 months ago at Wimbledon. It would have just had a totally different vibe. So I'm so glad that we got this tournament to really honor her in the way that we did, because it sort of reminded me also of, like, Andre Agassi. He beat Marcos Baghdatis, I think, in the second round. And that's sort of equivalent to this Annette Contivate in a way, and going out in the third round. And, like, it was such a good way, I think, to just see everything that Serena's made of, like, just through three matches. Like, that's pretty amazing, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. Speaking of Agassi, for Serena's first match this tournament, I was at the gym with a friend, and so I watched the first set, like, on the screen that was in front of one of the treadmills. Yeah. And I'd gotten my friends to read open. And so when it, like, sort of showed a montage of Serena at the beginning and then a bunch of other great players, I was like, look at the screen, that's Agassi. Because he was on there for a second. But yeah, that's it. that's the whole
idea. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just just so lucky that we got that her career was this long, and that her US Open run was this long. And yeah, I think whenever I'm sad, there are a lot of highlights that I can go back and revisit. And that's lucky too.
Yeah. Speaking of books, is there? I'm sure I don't follow that much, like, that aspect of tennis, but there must be a few books about Serena Williams, right? Is there, like, any biographical one? Owen, you would know it.
Googling now.
Okay.
So I did see on Wikipedia she wrote an autobiography in 2009, I think. Let's see. Serena Williams, My Life. Yeah, well, looks like there is one.
Well, in that case...
I will be buying that shortly, yeah.
Yeah. If it's that outdated, I could definitely, like, this is from actually 2009. I'd be excited to see if she has plans on releasing another one soon, or, like, if somebody's doing work to release one soon. That would be really cool to read. with her latest accomplishments in her career up to the end of it. I think it would be really awesome. So yeah, we'll be on the lookout for that. Definitely recommend it.
So, you know what really got me in the interview yesterday that she did on court? When she talked about Venus. You know, she was like, there's no Serena without Venus, and none of this would have ever been possible. And she was choking up and in tears as she said it. It just really got me thinking. Like, Venus is just such a crucial figure in her life. And I'm so glad that the movie about Richard Williams was all about Venus. I feel like that was such a good way to honor Serena in a way as well.
Yeah. Although I do hope they make another movie to tell the next few years of the story, because I felt like it ended so quickly.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah.
Definitely a biography of Serena Williams, like a documentary form or anything like that, like a fiction in a sense, or biopic would be interesting too. So
yes, like the 10 episode HBO series. Get on
that. Oh, yes. HBO, not Netflix.
Yes, absolutely.
What a supportive older sister, though. Like, just just always there for her.
Yeah.
So,
and then also, one more question I have for you guys. What do you think was the most memorable title run of the 20
memorable
that she has? It's kind of hard to pick one, I know, but it's just...
I think 2017 Australia is up there. I mean, knowing now in retrospect that she won that while pregnant, Venus in the final, both of them past their primes. It was her last one. I think that's hard to beat.
Yeah. I think that one of the most memorable has to be the first US Open that she won.
Yeah.
Way back when. I think it's quite an unbelievable one from her. Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
23 years ago.
Yeah. But yeah, of course.
That's like kind of poetic, isn't it?
2017. Yeah. Yeah. Wow, it's true. Yeah.
That was just
I guess 2017, 1999 would be the best ones for sure.
Yeah. What do you think, Fonz?
The 1999 one is the one that stands out for most people because she beat so many Grand Slam champions on the way, right? She beat like Martinez.
I think it was like five.
She beat Davenport. Or no, she beat Martinez, then she beat Selish. Then she beat Davenport. And then she beat Hingis in the final, who was only a year younger than her, but pretty much an established prodigy by then.
Yeah.
So that was spectacular. I think when she was asked this question, she mentioned something interesting. She mentioned the 2015 French Open. And that's sort of one that stands out to me as well, because she won the French Open in 2002. And, you know, this was her least successful major. So it took her, you know, so many years to then win it in 2015. And if you remember in that tournament, she was really, really sick. She said yesterday that she almost died in that tournament because of the flu and just everything that was surrounding it. And I still remember those matches she played against Sloane Stephens and Azarenka from a set down and Pashinsky in the semis from a set down. And then the final was pretty memorable too, because it looked like it was going to be a very straight and easy two-set victory. And she was up like 6-3, 4-1, game points for 5-1. And then she loses that set in a tiebreak and then just plays like some vintage tennis at the very end to close it out and win the French Open for the third time.
I think she was even down 2-0 in the third set. And at that point, it's like, okay, this has really gotten away from her. And then she just won six games in a row.
Yeah.
Like out of nowhere.
It's crazy. Really like when Serena can play well, like, I guess it's just really hard to stop. So
yeah, I don't even remember what year this was, but a while ago I was watching like a rerun of an Australian Open final on ESPN, and it was Serena and Lindsay Davenport. And I think Davenport won the first set and she was up in the second, but then Serena like hung in there and then won the second set. It was really close and then just bageled her in the third set. Like it was nothing. And it's like, wow. your window of opportunity is very, very small against her.
Yeah. I still remember like when she beat Radvanska in the, I want to say 2013 Wimbledon final.
2012, yeah.
2012, yeah. It was impressive the fight that Radvanska put to win the second set of 7-5, but then Serena just kind of essentially walked in and there was no chance like after that.
Yeah.
It was almost like a a woman versus girl at that point. Yeah. It was crazy.
I remember watching that one and thinking the same thing and just like marveling at the fact that Radvanska won a set. It's like, that should not have happened.
Yeah. Kind of crazy. She won 10 majors from the 2012 Wimbledon to the 2017 Australian Open.
Yeah.
And she had a Serena Slam in there as well.
She's two Serena Slams in her career.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Since she's won 10 majors between 30 and 35. That is just,
yeah.
I mean, talk about reinventing yourself tactically as well.
Yeah.
Like I think in 2013 or 2015, I think it was 2013, she had this outrageous record on clay. Like, it was her worst surface, and she was putting up like career best numbers on clay, like in her 30s. And it just kind of made no sense. But that's Serena.
Yep.
Yeah. I guess she got mad because Sharapova had become like a great player in clay. She decided that's not right. I have to do better than this.
Oh yeah, I forget the head-to-head with Sharapova. My goodness, Sharapova is 2-1, and then it becomes 22 in favor of.
Yeah,
Serena. That was just sad.
Talking about dominating her rivals, and even Venus, like one of the Serena slams, I think the first one, like all four major finals, she beat Venus. Like, that's brutal. Yeah, I mean, playing at the same time as her in her peak would not have been an enjoyable experience.
I'm kind of glad we got two matches between her and Graf. I feel like that was so cool that their careers overlapped, that we actually got to see two matches between, and they each won like 7-5 in the third. It was just so fitting. And, you know, she played against Henin and that era, like even before that, like Arantxa Sanchez. Like, she was part of like five eras, actually, if you think about it. It's like,
I had a great rivalry with Azarenka for a little bit in like 2013, 2012. I mean, she's played everyone.
I wish we had seen her play Coco Gauff and Swiatek and some of these other girls
that are maybe she had decided to play more of the season, we would have seen a bit of it. So,
and she was always able to flick a switch later in her career and just play like maybe 12 tournaments max a year. But like, just find her best tennis and work her way into the
just play the summer season and that's it.
Yeah.
If she wanted to do that, I'd be here for it. But I think I mean, just can't thank her enough for the career she gave us, because it was unparalleled.
So sure. do we think that she comes back for the Australian Open, or?
I don't think so.
I think it's going to be a negative as well. I just think she's going to be at peace, and eventually she'll put it all in perspective, and she'll realize this was a great
game. I think she doesn't come back either. So for everything that Serena has done, we thank you. The Tennis and Bagels podcast thanks Serena Williams for her career. Thanks for listening, everyone. We will be back for more US Open content. Again, thanks Serena Williams. We'll be watching highlights of your career for the rest of our lives. And we hope that all the tournaments are going to be putting a lot of content on her now.
Yes.
So,
Yep.
Cool.
Thanks for listening.
I did also want to pop one more thing really quick, because I did do a full episode with Steve Flink. And that was talking more about her career in depth and just some of the more statistical things and career achievements and looking at her career and rivals and all those other things that are much more tennis oriented and much more.
We're going to be putting that up in the nice.
So we're going to be putting that up in the description.
Make sure to All right.
Bye.
See you guys later.
See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.